Praise God. Well, get your Bibles out tonight. And if you would, go to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 22. Tracy, the title of this message is tonight, The Look, if you can designate it somewhere. Because I'm going to want to use this one. The Look. How many of you husbands have ever got the look from your wife? And Bruce, you were quick to raise your hand there. How many different looks do you know? Many? Several looks. They've all got a name. Yeah. Well, let's look over here. Y'all look over here. Yeah. You got the look of. I'm trying to be real cautious here. I don't get myself in trouble either. You know, it's okay if Bruce goes home in the doghouse, but I want to keep myself out of it. I can't. But you know, we all have a look, right? And you know, the look of, you know, have you lost your mind? Lately, it's been with my wife is the look that I can't find it, you know, and I say it's not there. And the look when she comes walking back with it in her hand. That look, you know. The look of when I say something I shouldn't have and the look of, did you really mean that? You didn't really say that, did you? That look. All those different looks, right? Well, there's a look that happened here in the scriptures that I want to look at here in chapter 22 of the Gospel of Luke. It kind of goes along with the message that I was preaching on Sunday and about who's your king. You know, I really believe, folks, that in 2010, I've said, man, I believe this is a year that we're going to win in 2010, but you're not going to win without a price, and you're not going to win unless Jesus is your king. And it's going to be a time that you're going to be challenged to what do you really believe? Like the other morning, I was just in my daily reading Matthew chapter 6, where he says, do not worry about what you will eat or what you will drink. For, you know, and I'm thinking, man, the whole world. And I'm just talking to the Lord like this. I said, Lord, everybody this morning got up and they're thinking about that. I mean, you know, not necessarily some people probably, what am I going to wear because it's cold or whatever, but we're all, you know, the world is functioning on, oh my gosh, I might lose my job, I'll lose my job, I'm going to lose my house, I'm going to lose my house, what am I going to eat, what are we going to wear, what, you know, I mean, that's the thought that runs the world, is what are we going to eat and what are we going to wear, right? It's the whole motive behind the spirit of the world. And Jesus just says it so matter-of-factly. Don't even think about what you're going to eat or what you drink. Man, if God so clothed the flowers of the field with all they got on them, and God feeds all the birds, what do you even got to worry about? And yet, you know, I would say 90% of our prayer is focused in that direction. Right? I mean, come on. And so all I'm saying is that we find ourselves at times, you know, and we get tested on who's our king. What do we really believe? How about this one? Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth where rust and moths will eat it, but lay for yourself up treasures in heaven. But if you go to anybody that's, you know, an accountant, you know, whatever, they'll tell you need to, you know, you're supposed to be setting money aside. Government takes money right out of our pay for our retirement. Whatever goes right on through. Everything's about, you know, what you're going to eat, what you're going to wear now, and what you got to get stored up for the future with no thought of eternity. I'm just the world. I'm talking the world here. All right, and it's so easy for us as Christians get caught up in it. And I'm just saying, what do you believe? You know, what really? I just believe in 2010. It can be the greatest days of our lives, or it can be the most disastrous day of our life. Right? I mean, if you go through and you notice the noteworthy miracles of the Bible, usually there was some trauma involved. Okay, look, for instance, in order for the sea to be calm, there had to be a storm. For Lazarus to come out of the grave, he had to die. There was a funeral, right? Even down to the wedding, they had to run out of wine, right? The Old Testament, the widow's husband died, and they had to have, she had to pay off the debt, but the oil flowed. The widow at Zarephath was down to her last meal. There had to be a famine in order to get in that situation. The brook didn't run dry, even though it was a drought. But there had to be a drought in order for the brook not to run dry. Right? It would be no miracle if it was the greatest days, the lush green fields were, you know, flowing in grain and the rains had come all over there, but Elijah found a brook that was running. So what? There'd have been hundreds of them. What made the miracle and got in the Bible was there was a drought, but there was a brook that was running. And there were ravens that came and fed him. Well, if there's plenty to eat, you wouldn't need ravens to feed you. Right? We want the noteworthy miracles in our lives. We want the great things in our lives, but there's a flip side of that. There's something that has to be a trauma in order to have the great thing happen. If you just want to live, you know, that's a different prayer altogether. Right? Took me a while to figure these things out in life, but I've gotten smarter as I've gotten older and thought, well, wait a minute, you know, let's think about this for a second. Okay? So, let's talk here about Luke chapter 22. And if you look down, I quoted this on Sunday, but let's look at it here. Luke chapter 22. It starts, if you start back in verse 25 and you go down to 31, that's where the disciples are sitting around talking about who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. I thought that would have been kind of an embarrassing conversation to be speaking of in the presence of Jesus. Right? What were these guys thinking? Everybody's talking about who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus has said, look, guys, it's all backwards from what you think. I'm paraphrasing this, but it's what it says. Read it. He says, it's all backwards from what you think. He said, in the kingdoms today, you get a kingdom and you have servants waiting on you and you're the greater one. But in my kingdom, the one who serves the king is the greater one. He says, it's backwards. He said, if you want to be great in my kingdom, you need to be a servant. Now, they look like fools? They're just arguing about who's going to be the greatest, and they're doing it all thinking about their, you know, who's going to serve, who's going to be the one that gets waited on. That's what their point was. And then all of a sudden, Jesus flips it on it and said, no, you got it all backwards. The one that's getting waited on is the lesser one. The one that's doing the waiting is the greater one in the kingdom of heaven. So if you want to be great, you got to be a servant. Everybody just had to look like stupid. Right? So, Jesus says, my Father bestowed on me a kingdom, and I'm going to bestow a kingdom on you. Now, again, that sounds great, but wait a minute. The Father bestowed a kingdom upon Jesus. Jesus was going to win the world, right? All the world was going to be saved through him. He was going to be the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. He's going to come back on a white horse, faithful on one side, true on the other side, right? He leads the army back, right? But he has to get nailed to a cross and die and spill his blood out to pay for the sins of the world before he gets that kingdom. So when they hear the word, I'm going to bestow upon you a kingdom, sounds good until you start figuring out what it takes to get the kingdom. Right? Okay. So he gets down here in verse 22, and here's his story. It says, and it said to him, no, I missed it. Excuse me. Go to 31. He said, Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat. Now, when I see this, when I hear the word sift as wheat, I can remember that metal can that looked like it was a vegetable can that had both ends cut out on the top of it and had the little screen on the bottom and had that sifter, you know, those old sifters Flour sifter. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, a flour sifter. I can still see my mother with that thing. Sifting the flour, right? And see, when I read that, he said, talking about sifting his wheat, my mind thinks about that flour sifter. And I'm assuming the reason why you want to do it, because you wanted to get the finest flour, right? Because the finest flour would make whatever you were cooking better. Is that correct? Didn't want a big lump in it. Get the weevils out. Work for that too, huh? But if you were inside that flour sifter, you know, a pretty rough place to be. And if the hole, you were in the stuck in the hole, you got that thing run over the top of your head, you're either going to conform to the size of the hole, right, and go through it, huh? Or get cut up into multiple pieces and then go through that hole, right? And in this illustration, this and what Jesus said to him is he desires to sift you like wheat. It was a terminology. It was when they take the wheat, they have it in there, and they throw it up in the air and catch the wind and take it off, and it falls down, and they get it, and they throw it back up again, you know, and still, that ain't a very good place to be. So in other words, he says Satan desires to come in there and just mess with your whole life, just get you thrown up and down all over the place. And he says, I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. Now, if Jesus would have just stopped right there, you know, it'd have been pretty good. But he goes on, and actually this is prophetic. He prophesies because he's already seen what's going to happen. And he says, and when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. He already knew he's going to forsake him. So Peter, he comes up and he says, Lord, I'm ready to go with you both to prison and to death. What are you talking about? And Jesus says, I tell you, Peter, the rooster shall not crow this day before you will deny me three times that you know me. I mean, Peter had his legs cut out from under him, but I want to just stop for a minute and talk about Peter. I don't believe Peter was a bad guy. He just never had been through what he was about to go through. And he thought he was going to do it a certain way, but when it came right down to it, Jesus already knew what he would do. And Peter didn't know what he'd do because Peter had never been in that situation. See, you can't fault yourself when you walk into a situation that you never have been in before and it kind of freaks you out and you maybe take a few steps back until you can gather yourself and go on if you've never been in it. But if you keep doing the same thing over again and it gets you every time, you're not learning the lesson somewhere. Right? So Peter here is like, man, I'll die for you, Lord. I'm ready to go. But seeing his whole time in his mind, Peter had this mentality of conquering the Romans. They're going to charge into the city. The swords are going to be flying. Everything's going to be, you know, wild, woolly, and war. We're going to knock them down, and we're going to tear them out. I'm going to, and as I go up, if I die in battle, it'll be valiant, you know. And this is what he's thinking. Not coming to the point where you've already lost before you ever got started. So the soldiers come and they take Jesus, and this happens not too long after Jesus has said all this to Peter. You know, several hours have passed by, and then this happens, and then all of a sudden Peter's like, what? Because see, Jesus, one of my favorite verses is right after this. He says, but now, he says, verse 35, he says, "When you, I sent you out with a money bag and without any money bag or knapsack or sandals, did you not lack anything?" He said, "Nothing, Lord." And he says, "Now I tell you, he has money bag, let him take it. Likewise, a knapsack, and he has no sword, let him sell a garment and buy one." So they had to go to the gun show and pick one up. It's one of my favorite verses. Anyway, has nothing to do with the message, and I just want to throw that in there. So anyway. So he He says, so they're all still kind of pumped. You know, they're talking about swords. And so here's two, and Peter's got a sword in his hand, and he's still feeling pretty frisky. And so then, you know, the story, all the things happen. They come to him. You know, he cuts the guy's ear off. Jesus suddenly put the sword up. You know, he puts his ear back on. These miracles are taking place. Everything is out of whack. It's all happened so quick. Nobody knows what's going. The next thing you know, they're trying to get them. They're running for their lives. The one guy jerked his clothes all off. He run off naked. You know what I mean? Just a chaotic situation. Right? Things are moving faster than Peter thought. He didn't see, well, where's the war? Where's the angels? Where's the fight? Where's the, whoosh, whoosh, man, I'm ready for this, Lord, and I done got blood on my sword, and, you know, nobody's fighting with me, and it's not going like I thought. Because, see, he couldn't see the end from the beginning. He had it all pictured in his mind how it should go down. And Jesus, he believed he was the Messiah. He believed he was king, but it's not going like he thought. And I believe that our biggest downfall in life is when things don't go like we think they should go, how they should go, we begin to falter. Because we have this line in our mind, it could only, Lord, you could only want it to go this way. So, story goes on, and let's pick it back up over here. In 54, it says they've arrested him and they led him and they brought him into the high priest's house. But Peter followed at a distance. Now he's starting to distance himself from Jesus. See, we can all have this mentality of what we would have done if we would have been there. But you're not there and you weren't there and you don't know. Right? Okay, but Peter now is beginning to distance himself from the situation. This is the first step that happens. So what I want you to know, from 54 here, verse 54 to verse 62, the devil sifts Peter. Now, I want to make this point. He did not sift him with cancer. He did not sift him with a car wreck. He did not sift him... He sifted him with what was in his own heart. The great, what's the word? The great trickery of Satan is to use yourself against yourself. And once he uses yourself against yourself, then you defeat yourself, and he never got his hands dirty. And all he's got to do is start it. So the start was, they've arrested Jesus. It's not going like he's thought. Peter's got to have been thinking, man, what did we do? Maybe we need to regroup. Maybe we're going to have to go back and let's go get some more swords. And maybe I need to gather the guys up. I don't know what to do. And so, but he starts distancing himself from Jesus because he doesn't know. So once he starts distancing himself from Jesus, it's a downhill slope. It says, a certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat by the fire, looked at, intently at him and said, this man was also with him. But he denied him, saying, woman, I don't know anything about him. Or I don't know who he is. I don't know him. So that was his first. He distanced himself, and then came the first challenge, and he denies Jesus. Now, I don't know. Again, I'm not knocking Peter tonight. You know, he comes back and does a great work. You know, I'm not trying to beat up on Peter. I'm just using this as to prick into our own hearts. Did he? I don't know. What did he do? Did he reckon he went, I can't believe I did that. What was the thought? We don't know. But he said, I can't believe I did that. Oh my gosh, what am I doing? Fool, stupid. I mean, was he thinking that Jesus' words denied him three times? Oh my God, that's once. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he wasn't thinking any about it. Maybe it didn't dawn on him at all. I don't know. 58, he says, a little while, another saw him and said, you also are of them? But Peter said, man, I'm not. Number two clicks in there. Then after about an hour, he passed another confidently, what's that word? I don't have my glasses. Constantly affirms, saying, Surely this fellow was with him, for he's a Galatian. But Peter said, man, I don't know what you're saying. And immediately he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. 61. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Oh, my gosh. Oh. Sweet, sweet Jesus turned. Looked in. Now, what do you reckon the look on Jesus' face was? I told you so? The I told you so look? Looked in my glasses. That's the I told you so look. The shame look. The scowl. You did what? The look. Oh, we have all these looks. We have all these countless, countless, countless looks. And what did Jesus' face look like to Peter? This is Robert Richards. This is totally thus saith Robert Richards, okay? This is not thus saith God. I think he smiled. I think he smiled and looked at Peter like, it's going to be okay. I think he turned and I think he looked at Peter with the look of, I know more than you do, but remember I've prayed for you. And it's going to be okay. I think that was the look on his face. I think he had a smile. I think there was a little, maybe just been the corner of his mouth, you know, or something. But I think he just kind of looked at him and was like, you know. Maybe Jesus turned and did this. That'd have been a good one. See, that's one of those scenes you're going to want to see on the DVD when you get to heaven. Because I want to see what the Lord's face looked like at that moment. But I think it was a confident smile to Peter saying, it's going to be okay. You've blown it. You did exactly what the devil wanted. You did it. But I prayed for you. Your face's not going to fail, buddy. It's okay. Come on. And then it says, and Peter went out and he wept bitterly. He came to that understanding that he in himself was limited. He could not do what he thought he did. He found out that the strength and all the boldness that he had inside him and all that he had learned and all the tenacity and all the character that he thought he had was challenged that night because the devil had sifted him and he found himself wanting. I believe the strength of Peter then after this comes in the Gospel of John, chapter 22, 21. Yeah, chapter 21, go to John 21. And I believe this is the strength of Peter that happens and takes place in this story. Now, I don't know that Peter was wrong when Peter went out and he said he's going to go fishing. And everybody went out to go fishing with him. I don't know that that was, I've heard some preachers preach and say, you know, he turned from the gospel and, you know, gave up on everything and went out and went fishing on. I don't know that that's really true. I don't know that Peter, so I think he just at that time didn't really know what to do. So he just did what he knew to do. And Peter was a fisherman. So he said, let's go fishing. That's where he met Jesus. Let's just go fishing, guys. I don't know. I imagine everybody's talking. Oh my gosh, what's happening? What did he do? He resurrected from the dead. He's alive. Because you've got to remember something. If Peter was such a bad guy and he had such shame and guilt in his life, how come he was the first one to the tomb when Jesus was resurrected? So you can't knock Peter. He didn't Even though he wept bitterly, even though he saw his faults, even though I believe his strength was, he turned back to Jesus and said, because Jesus said, I'm going to pray for you. When you return to me, strengthen your brothers. In other words, you're going to come back stronger than you've ever been. It's a down moment. It's a low point. It's a place where you shouldn't have been. But listen, you don't have to stay there. You're going to be great. Just because we have failure in life, the only reason we have failure in life is so we can have great success in life. You will never have a testimony if you have nothing to testify of that God ever delivered you from because you got your foot caught in the bear trap. Right? So, Peter says, let's go fishing because that's the only thing he knew to do. And sometimes in life, if you don't know what to do, just keep doing what you do know to do. Rather than trying to do something else that you're not sure it's God. Just keep doing what you know to do. So Peter went fishing. So he's out fishing with the buds, and you know the story. Jesus asked him to catch any fish, and they said, you know, no. And he said, put the net on the other side, and they catch the net, and it's full of fish. And so they come to the bank, and I was doing a study on that the other day, and that was like that one haul was like, you know, there's a dispute on exactly, but it's 158 fish, and how many, you know, what they would have normally caught, that was like a month's catch at one whack. So Jesus just, you know, gave them a month's salary in one fishing trip. And so they go up there to the bank, you know, Jesus got the fish cooking, you know. Man, I love that scene. That's a great scene to be. Just sitting on the beach, Jesus has got fish cooking. You just go sit down there with him, you know, poke around the fire, smell a fish. Just, I mean, that would have been so cool. Right? And Peter's sitting down there, and Jesus then says, turns to him and says, verse 15. So when they'd eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? So, again, there can be debate on all this about whatever, but this is the way I'm preaching tonight. That I believe Jesus has given Peter an opportunity to redeem himself. So in the middle of everybody standing there, they all know that Peter denied Jesus three times. He's going to give him three opportunities to reaffirm his love to him in front of everybody. So it just like, kind of like ends it. And he's not talking to everybody. He's talking to Peter. And he says, do you love me? Now, if you went through this in the Greek, he says to Jesus, Jesus says to Peter, do you love me? Meaning agape love, you know, unconditional love. And Jesus and Peter says back to him, you know I love you, but the love, the word and the terminology uses phileo love, which means brotherly love. Yes, you're my brotherly love. I love you like my brother. And then Jesus goes back to him and says, he says to him again, you know, he says, feed my lambs. He says, Peter, son of Jonah, do you love me? Again, do you agape me? Do you love me unconditionally? Are you willing to throw all in? Are you willing to pay the ultimate price? Are you willing now? Listen, I'm asking you, are you willing to lay down your life for me? I mean, he didn't say that, but he did in so many words. You love me like that, unconditionally. The last time you did this, you know, you denied me. And Peter said, Lord, you know I phileo love you. You know I love you. But he's talking again about Peter didn't catch it. He did not catch what he was talking about. He kept using the proper term, but it's like, see, our English language can't explain it because we only have one word for love. And we can't see it the same way that was being said, but you got to understand the love for your mother, the love for your brother, the love for your wife. It's all love, but it's different. The love of your country, the love of ice cream. It's different. Right? But the love that you're supposed to have for Jesus is not the same kind of love like that. The love we have for Jesus is a love that we love him unconditionally, that when he calls at 3 o'clock in the morning and you don't want to get up, you get up and put a smile on your face and say, yes, Lord, what do you want? Because we're servants. And we don't complain. Or go tell somebody, yeah, the Lord woke me up somewhere at 3 o'clock, because at least you make everybody think you're spiritual because you got up at 3 o'clock and the Lord spoke to you. See, it's the same thing. It's the wrong kind of love. It's the wrong mentality. And so Jesus says, don't you get it, Peter? No, I'm saying to you, do you agape me? Do you unconditionally love me? And Peter's like, yes, Lord, I love you. But he's using the wrong verbiage. Finally, the third time he asks him, and Peter catches on to what he's saying. He's saying, yeah. In other words, he didn't have to say, yes, Lord, I'll lay my life down for you. I'll die on the cross for you. I'll do whatever. I'll serve you all my days. He's finally caught it. He says, no, I agape you, Lord. I do love you unconditionally. No matter what the cost is, no matter what the price is, I love you. You know, we're all bold if someone pointed a gun at us and said, you know, if you did not deny Jesus or I'll shoot you, and you say, man, send me to heaven, Bubba. But pointed at your wife and say the same thing. Or your children, say the same thing. See, man, you got to understand something. Across the world, we are the biggest, the most wealthiest nation on the face of the earth. We as Christians have given more into the world than any other nation, even though what we've given is minimal compared to what should be given out of this nation. But we're sissies when it comes down to serving Jesus like they do in other nations, where you know that if to be a Christian, you literally will be murdered, killed because of your belief. Where you have to go and hide in churches, to go to underground churches and hide so that you won't be known and just, you know, I didn't know this. I never experienced this until I'd been to Russia in the early days over there, and to feel fear so thick in a nation that you could cut it with a knife. To see how people lived and what fear mentally did to people. To see the caution and literal terror on people's face for me just to walk into a building and say, hi, how you doing? Everybody's like, oh, God, who is he? What is he doing? He's noticed us. He's recognized. Get in the house. And you hear him running in the door, shut the door, lock all the doors. Because you never knew who was going to turn on you. You never knew who was going to turn you in. You never knew who the KGB would be putting pressure on to then turn you in to find out what they're doing, that they're not being good comrades. And then they would come and take them out by night and kill them and whatever. And you just build fear to see a nation full of fear. I mean, it's so thick you could cut it with a knife. We've never experienced anything like that. The things that goes on in the world today, in the Sudan, in Ethiopia, and all these lots of these other African countries, in Ghana, where they kill people, just murder people because they're Christians, and it's horrible. We don't experience that. But then you turn it around, but then they've never had $1,000 that the Lord told you to give somewhere. And you have to turn loose of it. See, there's other things that we've experienced that they've never experienced. Or what it's like to sacrifice, you know, doing something for somebody else, you know, or whatever. There's still sacrifices we make, but I'm talking about life and death. Okay? And so, Peter here, what I want you to see about Jesus is the graciousness of Jesus. When Peter's denied him, he's blown it. He gives him a chance to redeem himself. Then when he's blown it and he looks at him, I believe it was a look of, it's going to be okay. And then when he comes through and he gives him, and he builds him back up here, and finally Peter catches him and says, oh yes, Lord, I agape you. And he's like, that's what I want you to know. Now you're ready. Now you're going to be something. You're going to be the rock that I want to build my church upon. You're going to go out and going to do great things. And, you know, look at the rest of Peter's life. He was unbelievable, the things that happened in his life and what he did, and died on the cross for Jesus. And if you know the story of Peter, he died upside down on the cross because he said it wasn't worthy to be hung the same way as Jesus was, and they hung him upside down on the cross. Good news is tonight, I'm telling you, church, no matter how many times you've blown it, he's always there to love you and forgive you. No matter where you are or what you've done, Jesus loves you. No matter how many times you've denied him, no matter how many times you've messed up, he's always there for you. And he always gives you an opportunity. Always gives you an opportunity. And the next time you get a look, just think about how good Jesus' look would have been. Amen? And be encouraged.